Prabhupada, Psycho, Fatty Bo. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paravatacharya Osuteta Satoshi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chatanada Vaktavananda Gosami Srila Prabhupada Kijai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrindagajai, Namacharya Srila Huidas Thakur Gajai, Premseko, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha, Shri Vasudeva Gaur, Bhakta Vrindagajai, Shri Shri Radhakrishna, Gopi Gopinath, Sayamakunda, Radhakunda, Giri Govardhan Gajai, Vrindavanam Gajai, Maturam Kijai, Jagadathasami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Shimati Talasi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani Namaste. Pacharne Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarne. So let's read the translation. The lotus feet of our spiritual master are the only way by which we can attain pure devotional service. I bow down to his lotus feet with great awe and reverence. By his grace, one can cross the ocean of material suffering and obtain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He is my Lord, birth after birth. From him ecstatic prema emanates. By him, ignorance is destroyed. The Vedic scriptures sing of his character. Our master of the ocean of mercy, the friend of the poor, and Lord and master of the devotees. O master, be merciful unto us. Give us the shade of your lotus feet. Your fame is spread all over the world. Ki jai. So, let us go on to Krishna book. We just read yesterday about the killing of Bhaumasura, who is Krishna's son with the earth planet. And Krishna got permission from Satyabhama to kill him. And we understand that the earth planet Bhumi is an expansion of Satyabhama. So it's the same thing as getting permission from the mother to kill the kid. So, but Bhauma was a good kid until he had bad association. And with that bad association, he became bad. And so we can learn from this that with good association, we can become good. Or with bad association, we can become bad. So bad association means associating with people who are against God. G-O-D, the Supreme Father. They don't necessarily have to use the name Krishna, but they have to follow the orders of God, such as thou shalt not kill, etc. And that's one type of bad association associated with those who are against God. And another type is for those who are worshiping God, but very materialistic. Very materialistic. So we have to be very careful to understand these things, and because association means association with modes of nature, if you're associating with someone or something material, and association with the Vishuddha Sattva, the purified spiritual goodness, is when you're associating with someone spiritual. So, be careful who and what you associate with, and what type of music you listen to, what type of food you eat. Of course, your food should be offered to Krishna. So, anyway, so we can also become little Bhaumasuras at any moment. That's the jiva soul, very tiny, has the tendency to be covered. Vishnu is never covered, but the Jiva soul can be covered. So therefore, be careful. All right, so now we are going to read from Krishna books. So, Omagana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Militam Yena Tesmai Shigurvedam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master. So kindly open my eyes while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight. Open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. So, on that happy note, let us start Krishna book. And here it is. So, of course, we're reading right now from the 59th chapter, the second part of the 59th chapter. And the 59th chapter of the Krishna book deals with the killing of Bhaumasura. Krishna's already killed Bhaumasura, so he's getting some prayers from Bhumi at this particular point, and these prayers are just ending. Actually, my lord, this is Bhumi speaking, the earth goddess. Actually, my lord, you are the material nature. You are the father of the universe, and you are eternal time, which has caused the combination of the elements of nature and the manifestation of the material creation. Still, you are always transcendental to all these material activities. My dear lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know that earth, water, fire, air, sky, the five sense objects, mind, the senses and their deities, egotism and the total material energy, all these things animate and inanimate in this phenomenal world rest upon you. That means everything moving and not moving in this world that we can observe. Phenomenal means observe. Okay. Since everything is produced of you, nothing can be separate from you. Yet since you are transcendentally situated, nothing material can be identified with your personality. Everything, let me just check the sound levels here, you know, just make sure we are loud enough. It needs to be a little louder. Okay, that does it. All right, let me just... Okay. Everything is therefore simultaneously one with you and different from you. And the philosophers who try to separate everything from you are certainly mistaken in their viewpoint. Of course, this is the Achincha Beda Abeda philosophy that was specifically taught by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means everything is Krishna and everything's different from Krishna simultaneously. In the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches the same thing. Mayat Tatam Idam Sarvam Jagadavyakta Murtinat Matstani Sarvabhutani Naham Tesho Vastataha. Anyway, so that everything is different from Krishna and that Krishna has his own personality, his own transcendental interactions with his devotees, but everything is the same as Krishna because everything comes from Krishna. It's just like one sense the sunshine is the same as the sun, but another sense sunshine is not the same, or else you would be scorched if you were exposed to the sunshine and it was the same exactly 100% as the sun. It's one and different simultaneously. It's the emanation from the sun. My dear lord, may I inform you that this boy, whose name is Bhagadatta, is the son of my son Bhaumasura. He has been very much affected by the ghastly situation created by the death of his father and has become much confused and afraid. I have therefore brought him to surrender unto your lotus feet. I request your lordship to give shelter to this boy and bless him with your lotus feet. I bring him to you so that he may be relieved of the reactions of all the sinful activities of his father. That's actually Krishna's grandson, Bhagadatta. So anyway, so it's interesting. After Lord Krishna had heard the prayers of Mother Earth, he immediately assured her of immunity from all fearful situations. He said to Bhagadatta, "Don't be afraid." Then he entered the palace of Bhaumasura, which was equipped with all kinds of opulences. In the palace of Bhaumasura, Lord Krishna saw 16,100 young princesses who had been kidnapped and held captive there. When the princesses saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, enter the palace, they immediately became captivated by the beauty of the Lord and prayed for his causeless mercy. within their minds, they decided to accept Lord Krishna as their husband without hesitation. Each one of them prayed to Providence that Krishna might become her husband. Sincerely and seriously, they offered their hearts to the lotus feet of Krishna with an unalloyed devotional attitude. As the super soul in everyone's heart, Krishna could understand their uncontaminated desire, and he agreed to accept them as his wives. Thus he arranged for suitable garments and ornaments for them, and each of them, seated on a palanquin, was dispatched to Dwarka City. Krishna also collected unlimited wealth from the palace, a treasure of chariots, horses, jewels, and so on. He took from the palace 50 white elephants, each with 4 tusks, and all of them were dispatched to Dwarka. After this incident, Lord Krishna and Satyabhama entered Amaravati, the capital city of the heavenly planets, and they immediately entered the palace of King Indra and his wife, Satyadevi, who welcomed them. Krishna then presented Indra with the earrings of Aditi. When Krishna and Satyabhama were returning from the capital city of Indra, Satyabhama remembered Krishna's promise to give her a Parijata tree, because she had nagged Krishna. Taking the opportunity of having come to the heavenly kingdom, she uprooted a Parijata tree and placed it on the back of Garuda. Once Narada had taken a Parijata flower and presented it to Krishna's senior wife, Sri Rukmini Devi. On account of this, Satyabhama had developed an inferiority complex. She also wanted such a flower from Krishna. Krishna could understand the competitive womanly nature of his co-wives, and he had smiled. He had immediately asked Satyabhama, "Why are you asking for only one flower? I would like to give you a whole tree of Parijata flowers." Actually, Krishna had purposely taken his wife Satyabhama with him so that she could collect the Parijata with her hand, her own hand. But the denizens of the heavenly planets, including Indra, were very irritated. Without their permission, Satyabhama had uprooted a Parijata tree, which is not to be found on the earth planet. Indra, along with the other demigods, offered opposition to Krishna and Satyabhama for taking away the tree. But in order to please his favorite wife, Satyabhama, Krishna became determined and adamant. So there was a fight between the demigods and Krishna. As usual, Krishna came out victorious, and he triumphantly brought the Parijata tree chosen by his wife to this earth planet, to Dwarka. After this, the tree was installed in the palace garden of Satyabhama. On account of this extraordinary tree, the garden house of Satyabhama became extraordinarily beautiful. As the Parijata tree came down to the earth planet, the fragrance of his flowers also came down, and the celestial drones migrated to this earth in search of their fragrance and honey. King Indra's behavior toward Krishna was not very much appreciated by the great sages like Shukadeva Goswami. Out of his causeless mercy, Krishna had gone to the heavenly kingdom, Amaravati, to present King Indra with his mother's earrings, which had been lost to Bhomasura, and Indra had been very glad to receive them. But when a Parijata tree from the heavenly kingdom was taken by Krishna, Indra had fought with him. This was self-interest on the part of Indra. He had offered his prayer, tipping down his head to the lotus feet of Krishna. But as soon as his purpose had been served, he became a different creature. That is the way of the dealings of materialistic men. Materialistic men are always interested in their own profit. For this purpose, they can offer any kind of respect to anyone. But when their personal interest is over, they are no longer friends. This selfish nature is found not only among the richer class of men on this planet, but even in personalities like Indra and other demigods. Too much wealth makes a man selfish. A selfish man is not prepared to take to Krishna consciousness and is condemned by great devotees like Shukadeva Goswami. In other words, possession of too many worldly riches is a disqualification for advancement in Krishna consciousness. After defeating Indra, Krishna arranged to marry the 16,100 girls brought from the custody of Bhomasura. By expanding himself into 16,100 forms, he simultaneously married them all in different palaces at the same auspicious moment. He thus established the truth that Krishna and no one else is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is nothing impossible for Krishna. the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is all-powerful, omnipresent, and imperishable. And so there is nothing wonderful in this pastime. All the palaces of the more than 16,000 queens of Krishna were filled with suitable gardens, furniture, and other paraphernalia, to which there is no parallel in this world. There is no exaggeration in the story from Srimad Bhagavatam. The queens of Krishna were all expansions of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji. Krishna lived with them in different palaces, and he treated them exactly the same way an ordinary man treats his wife. Prabhupada one time was asked, you know, how could God marry 16,108 wives? And Prabhupada replied, we say that Krishna only married 16,108 wives. In other words, it was nothing for Krishna. Okay. We should always remember that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was plain exactly like a human being, although he showed his extraordinary opulences by simultaneously marrying more than 16,000 wives in more than 16,000 palaces. He behaved with them just like an ordinary man, and he strictly followed the relationship between husband and wife required in ordinary homes. Therefore, it is very difficult to understand the characteristics of the Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead. Even demigods like Brahma are unable to probe into the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The wives of Krishna were so fortunate they got the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their husband, although their husband's personality was unknown even to Brahma and other demigods. In their dealings as husband and wife, Krishna's queens would smile, talk, joke, embrace, and so on, and their conjugal relationship ever increasingly developed. In this way, Krishna and the queens enjoyed transcendental happiness in their household life. Although each and every queen had thousands of maidservants engaged for her service, the queens were all personally attentive to serving Krishna. Every one of them used to receive Krishna personally when he entered the palace. They engaged in seating him on a nice couch, worshipping him with all kinds of paraphernalia, washing his lotus feet with Ganges water, offering him betel nuts, and massaging his feet. In this way, they gave him relief from the fatigue he felt after being away from home. Wait for a second. Drop something. They fanned him nicely, offered him fragrant essential floral oil, decorated him with flower garlands, dressed his hair, asked him to lie down to take rest, bathed him personally, and fed him palatable dishes. Each queen did all these things herself and did not wait for the maidservants. In other words, Krishna and his different queens displayed on this earth an ideal household life. So thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 59th chapter of Krishna, the deliverance of the demon Bhaumasura. So let's erase that particular chapter. Let me just mark this down so I know that. Okay. So that's 59b. Okay. So now we're going to read chapter 60, which is talks between Krishna and Rukmini. Very, very interesting talk. Once upon a time, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all knowledge upon all living entities, from Brahma to the insignificant aunt, was sitting in the bedroom of Rukmini, who was engaged in the service of the Lord along with her assistant maidservants. Krishna was sitting on the bedstead of Rukmini, and the maidservants were fanning him with chamaras, that means yak tail fly whisks, which is what we use in the temple for the deity worship. Lord Krishna's dealings with Rukmini as a perfect husband are a perfect manifestation of the supreme perfection of the Personality of Godhead. There are many philosophers who propound a concept of the absolute truth in which God cannot do this or that. They deny the incarnation of God or the supreme absolute truth in human form. But actually the fact is different. God cannot be subject to our imperfect sensual activities. He is the all-powerful, omnipresent Personality of Godhead, and by his supreme will, He can not only create, maintain, and annihilate the whole cosmic manifestation, but also descend as an ordinary human being to execute the highest mission. Of course, he doesn't become an ordinary human being, but he acts as if he were an ordinary human being in certain ways. In other ways, he shows his God, like 16,108 wives. So he can do anything he wants. He's Swarat. He's independent. He's Optikama. Whatever he wants, he gets. You, although we would like to have that same opulence, it doesn't work like that. There was one movie and book. The movie was called The Secret, which basically says that if you want something, the universe will supply it. You know, really nonsense idea. That all you have to do is want something and meditate on it, and the universe becomes your servant. Bogus. But with Krishna, all he has to do is want something. Doesn't even have to meditate on it, and it happens just by his desire. So as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, whenever there are discrepancies in the discharge of human occupational duties, he descends, that's Krishna. He is not forced to appear by any external agency, but he descends by his own internal potency in order to reestablish the standard functions of human activities and simultaneously annihilate the disturbing elements and the progressive march of human civilization. In accordance with this principle of the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he descended in his eternal form of Sri Krishna in the dynasty of the Yadus. The palace of Rukmini was wonderfully furnished. Hanging from the ceiling were many canopies with laces bedecked with pearl garlands, and the whole palace was illuminated by the effulgence of valuable jewels. There were many flower groves of Malika and Chamali, which are considered the most fragrant flowers in India. There were many clusters of these plants with blooming flowers enhancing the beauty of the palace. And because of the exquisite fragrance of the flowers, little groups of humming bees gathered around the trees, and at night the pleasing moonshine glittered through the network of holes in the windows. There were many heavily flowered trees of Parijata, and the mild wind stirred the fragrance of the flowers all around. Incense burned within the walls of the palace, and the fragrant smoke leaked out of the window shutters. Within the room were mattresses covered with white bed sheets. The bedding was as soft and white as milk foam. In this situation, Lord Sri Krishna sat very comfortably and enjoyed the service of Rukmini Ji, who was assisted by her maidservant. So you may ask, you know, what is this about mattresses? Well, in India, it was, or the tradition, and maybe still is, especially when Prabhupada was present, we remember this, whenever Prabhupada was having guests in his room, at least in India, he would have mattresses spread on the floor and fresh sheets put on the mattresses. So I remember sitting in darshan with Srila Prabhupada in Sridhar Mayapur, and that's how the room was set up. There were mattresses everywhere, and we were sitting before Prabhupada. And of course, Prabhupada was sitting on a bigger cushion, but we were sitting on mattresses. So Prabhupada was ideal host, and that's the tradition in India. So Rukmini was very eager to get the opportunity to serve her husband, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, she wanted to serve the Lord personally and took the handle of the chamara from the hand of the maidservant and began to move the fan. The handle of the chamara was made of gold and bedecked with valuable jewels, and it became more beautiful when taken by Rukmini because all of her fingers were beautifully set with jeweled rings. Her legs were decorated with jeweled ankle bells, which rang very softly between the pleats of her sari. Rukmini's raised breasts were smeared with kunkuma and saffron. Thus, her beauty was enhanced by the reflection of the reddish color emanating from her covered breasts. Her high hips were decorated with a jeweled lace girdle, and a locket of great effulgence hung around her neck. Above all, because she was engaged in the service of Lord Krishna, although at that time she was old enough to have grown-up sons, her beautiful body was beyond compare in the three worlds. When we take account of her beautiful face, it appears that the curling hair on her head and her necklace of gold all combined to shower rains of nectar, and thus it was definitely proved that Rukmini was none other than the original goddess of fortune, who was always engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Narayana. So, of course, Rukmini never aged, as Krishna never aged. They always look like fresh youths. And that was for the whole time when Krishna and Rukmini were on the planet. The pastimes of Krishna and Rukmini and Dwarka are accepted by great authorities as manifestations of those of Narayana and Lakshmi, which are of an exalted opulence. The pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan are simple and rural, distinguished from the polished urban characteristics of those of Dwarka. The characteristics of Rukmini were unusually bright, and Krishna was very much satisfied by her behavior. Krishna had experienced that when Rukmini was offered a parijata flower by Narada Muni, Satyabhama had become envious of her co-wife and immediately demanded a similar flower from Krishna. In fact, she could not be pacified until she was promised the whole tree. And Krishna actually fulfilled his promise. He brought the tree down to the earth planet from the heavenly kingdom. After this episode, Krishna expected that because Satyabhama had been rewarded with a full tree of parijata, Rukmini would also demand something. Rukmini did not mention anything of the incident, however, for she was grave and simply satisfied in her service. Krishna wanted to see her a bit irritated, and therefore he schemed to see the beautiful face of Rukmini in an irritated condition. Although Krishna had more than 16,100 wives, he used to behave with each of them with familial affection. He would create a particular situation between himself and his wife in which the wife would criticize him in the irritation of love, and Krishna would enjoy this. In this case, because Krishna could not find any fault with Rukmini, for she was very grave and always engaged in his service, he smilingly, in great love, began to speak to her just to provoke her loving anger. Rukmini was the daughter of Bhishmaka, a powerful king. Remember the kidnapping. Thus, Krishna did not address her as Rukmini. He addressed her, this time, as the princess. My dear princess, it is very surprising. Many great personalities in the royal order wanted to marry you, although not all of them were kings. All possessed the opulence and riches of the kingly order, and they were well-behaved, learned, famous among kings, beautiful in their bodily features and personal qualifications, liberal, very powerful in strength, and advanced in every respect. They were not unfit in any way, and over and above that, your father and your brother had no objection to such a marriage. On the contrary, they gave their word of honor that you would be married with Shishupala. Indeed, the marriage was sanctioned by both your parents. Shishupala was a great king and was so lusty and mad after your beauty that if he had married you, I think he would always have remained with you, just like your faithful servant. In comparison to Shishupala, with his personal qualities, I am nothing. And you may personally realize it. I am surprised that you rejected the marriage with Shishupala and accepted me, who am inferior in comparison to Shishupala. I think myself completely unfit to be your husband because you are so beautiful, sober, grave, and exalted. May I inquire from you the reason that induced you to accept me? Now, of course, I may address you as my beautiful wife, but still I may inform you of my actual position, that I am inferior to all those princes who wanted to marry you. First of all, you may know that I was so much afraid of Jarasandha that I could not dare live on the land, and thus I have constructed this house within the water of the sea. It is not my business to disclose the secret to others, but you must know that I am not very heroic. I am a coward, and I am afraid of my enemies. Still, I am not safe, because all the great kings of the land are inimical to me. I have personally created this inimical feeling by fighting with them in many ways. Another fault is that although I am on the throne of Dwarka, I have no immediate claim. Although I have got a kingdom by killing my maternal uncle, Kamsa, the kingdom was to go to my grandfather. So actually, I have no possession of a kingdom. Besides that, I have no fixed aim in life. People cannot understand me very well. What is the ultimate goal of my life? They know very well, excuse me, that I was a coward boy in Vrindavan. People expected that I would follow in the footsteps of my foster father, Nanda Maharaj, and be faithful to Srimati Radharani and all her friends in the village of Vrindavan. But all of a sudden, I left them. I want to become a famous prince. Still, I could not have any kingdom, nor could I rule as a prince. People are bewildered about my ultimate goal of life. They do not know whether I am a coward boy or a prince, whether I am the son of Nanda Maharaj or the son of Vasudev. Because I have no fixed aim in life, people may call me a vagabond. That means a bum in common language. Someone who has no home, homeless. Homeless person. Bum. Therefore, I'm surprised that you could select such a vagabond husband. Besides this, I'm not very much polished, even in social etiquette. A person should be satisfied with one wife, but you see that I've married many times. And I have more than 16,000 wives. I cannot please all of them as a polished husband. My behavior with them is not very nice, and I know that you are very conscious of it. I sometimes create a situation with my wives which is not very happy. Because I was trained in a village in my childhood, I am not well acquainted with the etiquette of urban life. I do not know the way to please a wife with nice words and behavior. And from practical experience, it is found that any woman who follows my way or becomes attracted to me is ultimately left to cry for the rest of her life. In Vrindavan, many gopis were attracted to me, and now I have left them, and they are living but are simply crying for me in separation. I have heard from Akrura and Uddhava that since I left Vrindavan, all my coward boyfriends, the gopis and Radharani, and my father, foster father Nanda Maharaj, are simply crying constantly for me. I have left Vrindavan for good and now engage with the queens in Dwarka, but I am not well behaved with any of you. So you can very easily understand that I have no steadiness of character. I am not a very reliable husband. The net result of being attracted to me is to acquire a life of bereavement only. Krishna's really being very playful here. My dear, beautiful princess, you may also know that I am always penniless. Just after my birth, I was carried penniless to the house of Nanda Maharaj, and I was raised just like a coward boy. Although my foster father possessed many hundreds of thousands of cows, I was not the proprietor of even one of them. I was simply entrusted with taking care of them and tending them, but I was not the proprietor. Here also, I'm not the proprietor of anything, but I am always penniless. There's no cause to lament for such a penniless condition. I possess nothing in the past, so why should I lament that I do not possess anything at present? You may note also that my devotees are not very opulent. They also are very poor in worldly goods. Persons who are very rich, possessing worldly wealth, are not interested in devotion to me or Krishna consciousness. On the contrary, when a person becomes penniless, whether by force or by circumstances, he may become interested in me if he gets the proper opportunity. Persons who are proud of their riches, even if they are offered association with my devotees, do not take advantage of consciousness of me. In other words, the poorer class of men may have some interest in me, but rich men have no interest. I think, therefore, that your selection of me was not very intelligent. You appear very intelligent, trained by your father and brother, but ultimately you have made a great mistake in selecting your life's companion. But there's no harm. Mistake can still be rectified, and it is better late than never. You are at liberty to select a suitable husband who is actually an equal to you in opulence, family tradition, wealth, beauty, education, in all respects. Whatever mistakes you may have made may be forgotten. Now you can chalk out your own lucrative path of life. Usually a person does not establish a marital relationship with a person who is either higher or lower than his position. My dear daughter, the king of Vidarbha, I think you did not consider very sagaciously before your marriage. Thus you made a wrong selection by choosing me as your husband. You mistakenly heard about me I having a very exalted character, although factually I was nothing more than a beggar. Without seeing me and my actual position, simply by hearing about me, you selected me as your husband. That was not very rightly done. Therefore, since it is better late than never, I advise you to now select one of the great Kshatriya princes and accept him as your life's companion. And you may reject me. So, this is a divorce, which really wasn't allowed in those days. Krishna was proposing that Rukmini divorce him at a time when Rukmini already had many grown-up children. And also grandchildren. Therefore, Krishna's whole proposition appeared to be something unexpected, because according to the Vedic culture, there was no such thing as separation of husband and wife by divorce. Nor was it possible for Rukmini to choose a new husband at her advanced age when she had many married sons. To Rukmini, every one of Krishna's proposals appeared crazy, and she was surprised that Krishna could say such things. Simple as she was, her anxiety was increasing more and more at the thought of separation from Krishna. Krishna's very cruel here. Krishna continued, "After all, you have to prepare yourself for the next life. I therefore advise that you select someone who can help you in both this life and the next, for I am completely unable to help. My dear, beautiful princess, you know that all the members of the princely order, including Shishupal, Shalva, Jarasandha, Dandabhakra, and even your elder brother, Rukmi, are my enemies. They do not like me at all. They hate me from the cores of their hearts. All these princes were very much puffed up by their worldly possessions and did not care a fig for anyone who came before them. In order to teach them some lessons, I agreed to kidnap you according to your desire. Otherwise, I actually have no love for you." Oh my God. "Although you love me even before the marriage. As I've already explained, I'm not very much interested in family life or love between husband and wife. By nature, I'm not very fond of family life, wife, children, home, and opulences. As my devotees are always neglectful of all these worldly possessions, I am also like that. Actually, I am interested in self-realization. That gives me pleasure and not this family life." After submitting his statement, Lord Krishna suddenly stopped. The great authority, Shukadev Goswami, remarks that Krishna almost always passed his time with Rukmini, and Rukmini was a bit proud to be so fortunate that Krishna never left her even for a moment. Krishna, however, does not like any of his devotees to be proud. As soon as a devotee becomes so, by some tactic, he cuts down that pride. In this case also, Krishna said many things which were hard for Rukmini to hear. She could only conclude that although she was proud of her position, Krishna could be separated from her at any moment. Rukmini was conscious that her husband was not an ordinary human being. He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Three Worlds. By the way he was speaking, she was afraid of being separated from the Lord, for she had never heard such harsh words from Krishna before. Thus she became perplexed with fear of separation, and her heart began to palpitate. Without replying to a word of Krishna's statement, she simply cried in great anxiety, as if drowning in an ocean of grief. She silently scratched the floor with her toenails, which reflected reddish light on the floor. The tears from her eyes mixed with the black cosmetic ointment from her eyelids and dropped down, washing the kumkum and saffron from her breasts. Choked up on account of great anxiety, unable to speak even a word, she kept her head downward and remained standing just like a stick. Due to extremely painful fear and lamentation, she lost all of her powers of reason and became weak, her body losing so much weight that the bangles on her wrists became slack. The chamara with which she was serving Krishna immediately fell from her hand. Her brain and memory became puzzled and she lost consciousness. The nicely combed hair on her head scattered here and there, and she fell down straight like a banana tree cut down by a whirlwind. Lord Krishna immediately realized that Rukmini had not taken his words in a joking spirit. She had taken them very seriously, and in her extreme anxiety over immediate separation from him, she had fallen into this condition. Lord Sri Krishna is naturally very affectionate toward his devotees, and when he saw Rukmini's condition, his heart immediately softened. At once he became merciful to her. The relationship between Rukmini and Krishna was like that between Lakshmi and Narayan. Therefore, Krishna appeared before Rukmini in his four-handed manifestation of Narayan. He got down from his bedstead, lifted her up by her hands, and placing his cooling hands on her face, smoothed the scattered hair on her head. Lord Krishna dried the wet breasts of Rukmini Ji with his hand. Understanding the seriousness of Rukmini's love for him, he embraced her to his chest. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is expert in putting a thing reasonably for one's understanding, and thus he tried to retract all that he had said before. He is the only resort for all devotees, and so he knows very well how to satisfy his pure devotees. Krishna understood that Rukmini could not follow the statements he had made in a joking way. To counteract her confusion, he spoke as follows. My dear daughter of King Vidarbha, my dear Rukmini, please do not misunderstand me. Don't be unkind to me like this. I know that you are sincerely and seriously attached to me. You are my eternal companion. The words which have affected you so much are not factual. I wanted to irritate you a bit, so much, and I was expecting you to make counter-answers to those joking words. Unfortunately, you have taken them seriously. I am very sorry for it. I expected that your red lips would tremble in anger when you heard my statement, and that you would chastise me with many words. O perfection of love, I never expected that your condition would be like this. I expected that you would cast your unblinking glance upon me in retaliation, and that I would thus be able to see your beautiful face in that angry mood. Now, we want to remember one thing ontologically, that Rukmini is a direct expansion of Chandravali in Vrindavan. And as far as Satchabhama, she's a direct expansion of Srimati Radharani. So Srimati Radharani has what's called a bomb or left-handed mood. Left-handed mood means sometimes unsubmissive to please Krishna. She was submissive, but her manifestation of unsubmissiveness was done with the motivation of pleasing Krishna, because Krishna wanted to see that. So she would argue with Krishna, get angry with Krishna, and everything like that. And so as far as Chandravali, she's right-handed girlfriend. That doesn't mean she wrote with her right hand, but, you know, right-handed girlfriend. And therefore, she was very, very submissive. She would not at least display her anger towards Krishna directly. Even if there was some in her heart, she would not display it directly. So there's a contrast. And of course, she was the so-called competitor of Radharani, and that's how she serves Radharani and enhances the rus between Krishna and Radharani by being the so-called competitor, not an actual competitor. There's actually no competitor to Radharani. She's an expansion of Radharani, so she serves Radharani in that way. So we're dealing basically with the expansions of Radha and the expansions of Chandravali from Goloka Vrindavan, and therefore Rukmini is not getting angry with Krishna, but taking Krishna's words extremely seriously. So, on that happy note, let's see. Mood, angry mood. Okay, with that happy note, we're going to stop sharing and allow you to ask questions. Allow you to unmute yourselves and ask questions. So who has a question? You can either raise your hand, type in the chat window, or you can unmute yourself if you're bold enough to unmute yourself without raising your hand first. So does anyone have any questions? You got three options. Okay, Madhava, you have a question. You're muted. You have to unmute yourself. Okay, I can hear you now.
Yeah, so Dandavat, so pranam to your lotus feet. So Yeah, so why Krishna, when he knows the nature of Rukmini, then why he was saying all these things? What was the purpose?
Yeah, so your question is that Krishna is God. He certainly knew how
Yes.
Rukmini would react, and he knows Rukmini's submissive nature.
Yes.
Basically, there's several answers to that question. One answer is that under the influence of Yoga Maya, he forgot that. That's one answer. Because there's Yoga Maya, under the influence of Yoga Maya, Krishna forgets that he knows everything. Because if Krishna remembered that he knew everything, it would make life kind of boring for Krishna. Isn't it? I mean, if you know everything, then what's the excitement? What's the suspense? What's anything? Just it's like seeing a movie twice, right? If you've seen a movie twice, I mean, most movies I wouldn't want to see twice. In fact, most movies I wouldn't want to see at all. So it's like seeing, knowing what happened, or reading a novel twice. Of course, reading about Krishna's pastimes twice or so is different because it has some rust there. Even if you know what's going to happen, just like I've read the story many, many times before. So that's one reason, is that Krishna, under the influence of Yogamaya, forgets he's the Supreme Personality of God and forgets what sort of reaction he's going to get from Rukmini. Another one is that he basically wanted, possible explanations that Krishna wanted to see Rukmini present something that she's going to present at the end of this particular chapter, of misinterpreting or reinterpreting Krishna's words as glorification. Krishna's words that were supposed to denigrate himself, Krishna was denigrating himself when he was first talking to Rukmini about his poverty-stricken position, like that. So she actually turns those words around. So Krishna wanted to give her an opportunity to do that. And Krishna wanted to see her submissive nature. There's many different ways you could look at this particular pastime. My favorite, of course, is that Krishna forgets that he's God and he wants to enjoy that relationship. Simple explanation. So, is that all right?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madhava. So, Jagai, you have a question. You just unmuted yourself.
Yes. The descriptions of what the queens did for Krishna is very reminiscent of the archa worship of the Archa-Vigraha.
Yes.
And it also says in Nectar of Devotion that we don't have to worship Rukmini. So traditionally, worshiping Rukmini was a part of that Archa-Vigraha. Was it traditionally in the mood of the queens?
I mean, we worship Radha and Krishna in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan or Rukmini Krishna. So, and in many temples in India, I don't know what you say, most temples, they worship Lakshmi Narayan. I mean, if you go to South India, for example, Srirangam, of course, it's Venkateshwara and his wife Sri, which is Lakshmi, and Bhu, which is Bhumi, expansion of Lakshmi, and practically many temples. I mean, Lakshmi, Nrsimha, like that. That's a traditional methodology, except for those who are Brajavasis or worshiping in the mood of Vrindavan. So yes, it is a fact. It is a fact that Yeah, so anyway, that's our mood of worship too, when we worship Radha and Krishna on the altar, in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Does that answer your question?
Yes, except for why is it that we don't worship Rukmini anymore?
We don't worship Rukmini?
Yeah, it says in Nectar of Devotion that some traditionally they had to include worship of Rukmini in the Pancharatrika
Yeah.
rituals, but
Yeah.
we don't have to do that.
No. I mean, because that's applied, our methodology of worship is applied by our Acharya, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And of course, they do in certain temples. If you go to Dwarka, they have temples of Rukmini Dwarkadish. And Los Angeles, the deities are called Rukmini Dwarkadish, probably gave them that name. And Los Angeles is called New Dwarka. So there are temples of Rukmini and Dwarkadish in India, but, you know, the application of that is given by our founder Acharya. How do you apply those particular injunctions? I mean, there's many injunctions that are there in Nectar Devotion or in other literatures or in Narada Pancharatra that we don't follow because they may not be applicable to us. And Prabhupada is a Brajavasi, so he's concentrating on that. I mean, Prabhupada indicates that in one purport in the Bhagavad Gita where he says one should meditate on the form of Krishna and not any other form, you know, so. And Prabhupada didn't mean that to be taken literally as a prohibition, you know, so that we find someone worshiping Lord Ram, he said, you're disobeying His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. It wasn't literally taken, or shouldn't be literally taken as an order. It should be taken as Prabhupada's Brajavasi mood. Does that make sense? Okay, on that happy note, there's a chat here. Speak more on Krishna taking away our pride when we get more proud. That's pretty obvious. You know, I know you like to get smashed. This particular devotee likes to get smashed. But, you know, I don't think we need to talk more about that. Of course, there's that verse, Yashaham Manugrinami Hurishe Tadanam Shanai. For those who I especially favor, I take away everything so their friends and relatives reject them, and then they just have to take shelter of my holy names. Krishna does whatever is best for us. Just take it that way. Don't get into this smashing. And yes, it was the person you think it was. You know, someone sent me a message. It must be blanky, blanky, blank. And I'm sure Jagat can understand who it was, too. So, it's someone here in New Goloka. So, don't worry, Krishna. The main thing is Krishna does what's best for us. Whether it's giving us, like Prabhupada said, Prabhupada's father told Prabhupada, Krishna has 10 hands and 10 arms. And with those 10 arms and 10 hands, if Krishna wants to take something away, he will. And with those 10 arms and 10 hands, if Krishna wants to give you something, you won't be able to keep Krishna from giving you those things. So, don't worry. Don't worry. You know, and if Krishna puts you in a difficult situation, yeah. So, yes, it's a fact that if you do become proud, Krishna will make an arrangement to show you you ain't the cat's meow. That's an American expression. Cat's meow means, like, whatever. I mean, what do you have to be proud of anyway? Krishna will take it all away. Especially as you get older, you know, just all your strength and not your intelligence, hopefully. But sometimes Krishna will do that. He'll just, you know, you could be a fantastic word juggler and then all of a sudden, huh? What did I say? You know, you can just be dumbfounded. So, anyway, don't worry about it. Okay, on that happy note, so you don't worry about Krishna taking everything away or smashing you. And sometimes Krishna puts you in a difficult situation, not because you're proud, just because to help you cry out, Ainanda Tanuja Kingaram, to cry out to him. I mean, there's many reasons why Krishna puts you in a difficult situation, or Krishna arranges that, or sometimes Krishna puts you in a difficult situation because you act foolishly, and you put yourself in a difficult situation. Sometimes you do something, put yourself in a difficult situation, and it's not Krishna. Because, yes, generally if something's outside of our control, we can say, that's Krishna doing it. But if we do something stupid, like we don't wear a seatbelt, and we get in an accident and our head goes through the windshield, so that's Krishna. Krishna wanted my head to go through the windshield of the car. You know, he wanted to give me some scars or whatever. So, you know, No, your foolishness too. So don't be foolish and don't blame Krishna for your own foolishness. Just serve Krishna and chant the best you can and try not to be worried. As the song goes, don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy, chant Hare Krishna. All right. So, on that happy note, or not so happy note, we'll see everybody tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow we'll be able to see everybody and continue with this Krishna book reading, which is a very interesting chapter of Rukmini turning around the words of Krishna. So the Krishna's words of self-denigration, she turns into praise of Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami.